Chapter 29. Travers. You may believe every word he says. There isn't a thought or a purpose in that settlement, he continued, pointing at the dumb solitude of the lagoon, that this man doesn't know, as if they were his own. I know. Ask me, muttered Jorgensen, mechanically. Mrs. Travers said nothing but made a slight movement and her whole rigid figure swayed dangerously. Lingard put his arm firmly around her waist, and she did not seem aware of it till after she had turned her head, and found Lingard's face very near her own. But his eyes full of concern looked so close into hers, that she was obliged to shut them like a woman about to faint. The effect this produced upon Lingard was such that she felt the tightening of his arm, and as she opened her eyes again some of the color returned to her face. She met the deepened expression of his solicitude with a look so steady, with a gaze, that in spite of herself was so profoundly vivid, that its clearness seemed to Lingard, to throw all his past life into shade. Don't feel faint. It isn't that at all, she declared in a perfectly calm voice. It seemed to Lingard as cold as ice. Very well, he agreed with a resigned smile. But you just catch hold of that rail, please, before I let you go. She, too, forced a smile on her lips. What incredulity, she remarked, and for a time made not the slightest movement. At last, as if making a concession, she rested the tips of her fingers on the rail. Lingard gradually removed his arm. And pray, don't look upon me as a conventional weak woman person, the delicate lady of your own conception, she said, facing Lingard, with her arm extended to the rail. Make that effort, please, against your own conception of what a woman like me should be. I am perhaps as strong as you are, Captain Lingard. I mean it literally. In my body. Aren't you think I have seen that long ago? She heard his deep voice protesting. And as to my courage, Mrs. Travers continued, her expression charmingly undecided between frowns and smiles, didn't I tell you only a few hours ago, only last evening, that I was not capable of thinking myself into a fright? You remember, when you were begging me to try something of the kind. Don't imagine that I would have been ashamed to try. But I couldn't have done it. No. Not even for the sake of somebody else's kingdom. Do you understand me? God knows, said the attentive Lingard after a time, with an unexpected sigh. Why you people seem to be made of another stuff. What has put that absurd notion into your head? I didn't mean better or worse. And I wouldn't say it isn't good stuff either. What I meant to say is that it's different. One feels it. And here we are. Yes. Here we are, repeated Mrs. Travers. And as to this moment of emotion, what provoked it is not a concern for anybody or anything outside myself. I felt no terror. I cannot even fix my fears upon any distinct image. You think I am shamelessly heartless in telling you this? Lingard made no sign. It didn't occur to him to make a sign. He simply hung on Mrs. Travers' words as it were only for the sake of the sound. I'm simply frank with you, she continued. What do I know of savagery, violence, murder? I have never seen a dead body in my life. The light, the silence, the mysterious emptiness of this place have suddenly affected my imagination, I suppose. What is the meaning of this wonderful peace in which we stand, you and I alone? Lingard shook his head. He saw the narrow gleam of the woman's teeth between the parted lips of her smile, as if all the ardor of her conviction had been dissolved at the end of her speech into wistful recognition of their partnership before things outside their knowledge. And he was warmed by something a little helpless in that smile. Within 3 feet of them the shade of Jorgensen, very gaunt and neat, stared into space. Yes. You are strong, said Lingard. But a whole long night sitting in a small boat. I wonder you are not too stiff to stand. I am not stiff in the least, she interrupted, still smiling. I am really a very strong woman, she added, earnestly. Whatever happens you may reckon on that fact. Lingard gave her an admiring glance. but the shade of Jorgensen, perhaps catching in its remoteness the sound of the word woman, was suddenly moved to begin scolding with all the liberty of a ghost, in a flow of passionless indignation. Woman. That's what I say. That's just about the last touch that you, Tom Lingard, Red-Eyed Tom, King Tom, and all those fine names, that you should leave your weapons 20 miles behind you, your men, your guns, your brick that is your strength, and come along here with your mouth full of fight, bare-handed and with a woman in tow. Well, well. Don't forget, Jorgensen, that the lady hears you, remonstrated Lingard in a vexed tone. Dot-dot, he doesn't mean to be rude, he remarked to Mrs. Travers quite loud, as if indeed Jorgensen were but an immaterial and feelingless illusion. He has forgotten. The woman is not in the least offended. I ask for nothing better than to be taken on that footing. Forgot nothing, mumbled Jorgensen with a sort of ghostly assertiveness, and as it were for his own satisfaction. What's the world coming to? It was I who insisted on coming with Captain Lingard, said Mrs. Travers, treating Jorgensen to a fascinating sweetness of tone. That's what I say. What is the world coming to? Hasn't King Tom a mind of his own? What has come over him? He's mad. Leaving his brig with 120 born and bred pirates of the worst kind in two pros on the other side of a sandbank. Did you insist on that too? Has he put himself in the hands of a strange woman? Jorgensen seemed to be asking those questions of himself. Mrs. Travers observed the empty stare, the self-communing voice, his unearthly lack of animation. Somehow it made it very easy to speak the whole truth to him. No, she said, it is I who am altogether in his hands. Nobody would have guessed that Jorgensen had heard a single word of that emphatic declaration, if he had not addressed himself to Lingard with a question neither more nor less abstracted than all his other speeches. Why then did you bring her along? You don't understand. It was only right and proper. One of the gentlemen is the lady's husband. Oh, yes, muttered Jorgensen. Who's the other? You have been told. A friend. Poor Mr. Delcasser, said Mrs. Travers. What bad luck for him to have accepted our invitation. But he is really a mere acquaintance. I hardly noticed him, observed Lingard, gloomily. He was talking to you over the back of your chair when I came aboard the yacht, as if he had been a very good friend. We always understood each other very well, said Mrs. Travers, picking up from the rail the long glass that was lying there. I always liked him, the frankness of his mind, and his great loyalty. What did he do? Asked Lingard. He loved, said Mrs. Travers, lightly. But that's an old story. She raised the glass to her eyes, one arm extended fully, to sustain the long tube, and Lingard forgot Delcasser in admiring the firmness of her pose, and the absolute steadiness of the heavy glass. She was as firm as a rock after all those emotions and all that fatigue. Mrs. Travers directed the glass instinctively toward the entrance of the lagoon. The smooth water there shone like a piece of silver in the dark frame of the forest. A black speck swept across the field of her vision. It was some time before she could find it again, and then she saw, apparently so near as to be within reach of the voice, a small canoe with two people in it. She saw the wet paddles rising and dipping with a flash in the sunlight. She made out plainly the face of Imada, who seemed to be looking straight into the big end of the telescope. The chief and his sister, after resting under the bank for a couple of hours in the middle of the night, had entered the lagoon, and were making straight for the hulk. They were already near enough to be perfectly distinguishable to the naked eye, if there had been anybody on board to glance that way. But nobody was even thinking of them. They might not have existed except perhaps in the memory of old Jorgensen. But that was mostly busy with all the mysterious secrets of his late tomb. Mrs. Travers lowered the glass suddenly. Lingard came out from a sort of trance and said, Mr. Delcasser. Loved. Why shouldn't he? Mrs. Travers looked frankly into Lingard's gloomy eyes. It isn't that alone, of course, she said. First of all, he knew how to love and then... You don't know how artificial and barren certain kinds of life can be. But Mr. Delcasser's life was not that. His devotion was worth having. You seem to know a lot about him, said Lingard, enviously. Why do you smile? She continued to smile at him for a little while. The long brass tube over her shoulder shone like gold against the pale fairness of her bare head. T.A. thought, she answered, preserving the low tone of the conversation into which they had fallen, as if their words could have disturbed the self-absorption of Captain H.C. Jorgensen. At the thought that for all my long acquaintance with Mr. Delcasser I don't know half as much about him as I know about you. Ah, that's impossible, contradicted Lingard. Spaniard or no Spaniard, he is one of your kind. Tarred with the same brush, murmured Mrs. Travers, with only a half-amused irony. But Lingard continued. He was trying to make it up between me and your husband, wasn't he? I was too angry to pay much attention, but I liked him well enough. What pleased me most was the way in which he gave it up. That was done like a gentleman. Do you understand what I mean, Mrs. Travers? I quite understand. Yes, you would, he commented, simply. But just then I was too angry to talk to anybody. And so I cleared out on board my own ship and stayed there, not knowing what to do, and wishing you all at the bottom of the sea. Don't mistake me, Mrs. Travers. It's you, the people laughed, that I wished at the bottom of the sea. I had nothing against the poor devils on board. They would have trusted me quick enough. So I fumed there till 9 o'clock or a little after, suggested Mrs. Travers, impenetrably. No. Till I remembered you, said Lingard with the utmost innocence. Do you mean to say that you forgot my existence so completely till then? You had spoken to me on board the yacht, you know. Did I? I thought I did. What did I say? You told me not to touch a dusky princess, answered Mrs. Travers with a short laugh. Then with a visible change of mood, as if he had suddenly out of a light heart been recalled to the sense of the true situation, but indeed I meant no harm to this figure of your dream. And, look over there. She is pursuing you. Lingard glanced toward the north shore, and suppressed an exclamation of remorse. For the second time he discovered that he had forgotten the existence of Assam and Amada. The canoe was now near enough for its occupants to distinguish plainly the heads of three people above the low bulwark of the Emma. Amada let her paddle trail suddenly in the water, with the exclamation, I see the white woman there. Her brother looked over his shoulder and the canoe floated, arrested as if by the sudden power of a spell. They are no dream to me, muttered Lingard, sturdily. Mrs. Travers turned abruptly away, to look at the further shore. It was still and empty to the naked eye, and seemed to quiver in the sunshine like an immense painted curtain lowered upon the unknown. Here's Raja Assam coming, Jorgensen. I had an idea he would perhaps stay outside. Mrs. Travers heard Lingard's voice at her back, and the answering grunt of Jorgensen. She raised deliberately the long glass to her eye, pointing it at the shore. She distinguished plainly now the colors in the flutter of the streamers above the brown roofs of the large settlement, the stir of palm groves, the black shadows inland and the dazzling white beach of coral sand all ablaze in its formidable mystery. She swept the whole range of the view, and was going to lower the glass, when from behind the massive angle of the stockade there stepped out into the brilliant immobility of the landscape a man in a long white gown, and with an enormous black turban surmounting a dark face. Slow and grave he paced the beach ominously in the sunshine, an enigmatical figure in an oriental tale with something weird and menacing in its sudden emergence and lonely progress. With an involuntary gasp, Mrs. Travers lowered the glass. All at once behind her back she heard a low musical voice beginning, to pour out incomprehensible words in a tone of passionate pleading. Hassam and Amada had come on board, and had approached lingered. Yes. It was intolerable to feel that this flow of soft speech which had no meaning for her could make its way straight into that man's heart. Part 5. The point of honor and the point of passion, may I come in? Yes, said a voice within. See, the door is open. It had a wooden latch. Mr. Travers lifted it, while the voice of his wife continued as he entered. Did you imagine I had locked myself in? Did you ever know me lock myself in? Mr. Travers closed the door behind him. And no, it has never come to that, he said in a tone that was not conciliatory. In that place which was a room in a wooden hut, and had a square opening without glass, but with a half-closed shutter he could not distinguish his wife very well at once. She was sitting in an armchair, and what he could see best was her fair hair all loose over the back of the chair. There was a moment of silence. The measured footsteps of two men pacing athwart the quarter deck of the dead ship Emma. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.